What do living your yoga and a Christian pastor have to do with each other? When the Christian pastor is Ryan Meeks, the answer is everything. Having grown up the son of an evangelical pastor, Ryan's church roots may be deeper than his yoga roots, but it would be impossible to separate the values each has instilled in him. Not yet 40 years old, Ryan possesses a wisdom many people never obtain, which includes his mantra, a message that all people, no matter their beliefs, can agree with. It is simply, life is a gift, and love is the point. It's simple truths like this one that helped him through his recent treatment for Hodgkin's lymphoma. I asked him what has changed now that he's faced death.
Well, in the last few years have been, probably the last 7 to 5 years have been pretty transformative in that way. There have been many deaths along the way, but this year, certainly facing mortality at a deeper level has been pretty profound. My wife and I were laughing the other day that it's kind of like there are no bad days allowed anymore, you know? It's like I wake up every day like, I'm alive and I don't have cancer, so it's hard to complain too much anymore about anything since going through that, it was so, chemo was just so awful on the body that anything besides having chemo sounds incredible. So I think just the overall outlook of, you know, kind of what you allow to annoy you or frustrate you, or the, you know, what Wayne Dyer would say, those patterns of thinking that you sort of dwell on, they don't have as much power, I think, at least. Now, I'm pretty fresh off the all clear, so I hope that stays. I hope that awareness is a part of my new way of being in the world, but only time will tell how disciplined I am in staying connected to that, those lessons, I think.
This isn't the first time that you've faced a death threat.
No, it is not. I got about 4 or 5 individual death threats back in the early part of 2015 when the church community that I founded with my wife and a few friends, I guess at that point 11 years earlier, we had made a decision to make a formal statement for full inclusion of the LGBT community. Many of whom were our personal friends. And not everyone in the quote-unquote Christian world takes that too well. So that was an interesting season.
Can you tell us more about that time?
Yeah. Well, it started years before that, really, when I had, you know, we started a church with a few of our friends, and then about 9 years into it, the church was so large, and I had a big enough staff where I wasn't just dealing with the urgencies of a fast-growing, whatever, business, church, whatever it is. It's an organization, and it was moving so quickly that by the time, you know, I finally had a staff and I could actually have some time to sit down and think, some questions and some uneasiness about some certain things I was supposed to think or believe or say, I had time to think, basically. And by the time I had time to think, some uneasiness about my own tradition, what we were saying, what we were sort of built on, I could no longer agree to those things. I think, I don't know who said it, but it's something about enlightenment is when you can no longer agree to things that insult your soul. Mm. Anyway, we had talked about it for a long time as a staff, and I had been pretty open about my doubts over the years anyway. I mean, I'd had a lot of hate from the church world for a long time. I've been doing it wrong in their eyes since
from outside
we started.
Of your church,
yeah.
Outside of the church that you founded.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of other, you know, other churches or whatever. There was always something wrong about what we were doing. We were always, I guess, on the edge. But when my friend who was on staff, Christina, came out to me and was crying and like afraid of what would happen, it was, that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, you know. I couldn't believe someone who knew me that well would be afraid to tell me something that I thought was beautiful news, that she fell in love with another one of our friends who happened to be female. And that sort of kicked it into high gear. We made a decision. We need to say something publicly, because we had been operating affirming for years, but we hadn't said anything publicly out of fear of reprisals and all the rest of that. So when we did that, it became a Time Magazine thing. So it was national and international in its scope, and it certainly bothered some people in our community, but more than anything, it just went so wide nationally that I was getting, you know, death threats and looking back, my wife's like, you should have kept those and given them to the police, you know? So maybe she's right, but they've kind of calmed down since.
Well, I think it's incredible that you were able, a lot of people, they find their job essentially no longer fits them, mm-hmm. or they no longer fit in their role, mm-hmm. and they leave. But yep. you essentially said, well, I've made a change, mm-hmm. and I'm taking you all with me.
Yeah.
How were you able to do that?
Well, to be honest, I thought that the only way to deal with all of the issues that I felt like were coming to the service was to leave. I thought that was the road I was going to end up taking. I was like, dude, I don't believe anyone's going to some sort of hell place. I don't think that we have the exclusive access to truth. I don't think there's a problem with gay people. And I don't think, you know, some being God ever wrote a book called the Bible. So those are like pretty central things to at least American Christianity. So mm-hmm. I thought I was like, I just needed to go. But when I started to talk to my staff about this stuff and make this more public with them, I realized that they were having the same issues. And I was like, well, if you guys are going to stick with me, then I feel like we can keep going, you know? But just know this, it's not going to go well. If people are going to get angry, we're going to maybe possibly all be unemployed and this thing's going to go down. But if we do this, we'll set people free. There are a lot of people who are looking for a spirituality or a path out of an unhelpful spirituality. You know, like we said earlier, the lies that insult your soul. And so, in some ways, I feel like, we're sort of the last stop on the train out of exclusionary Christianity. Like, mm-hmm. people are, like, already on their way out of it. And I think there are redemptive things in the Christian tradition still. Sometimes you have to bail on it and move on and take a big break and all that. But I think that, to throw it out entirely is a little bit adolescent. You can only love a religion as long as you didn't grow up in it, you know? Like, Westerners love the East. The problem is travel East. I mean, you're going to find the same issues embedded in every tradition. And so I hope to sort of shuck the garbage of the Christian tradition off so we can get to the meat, the important stuff that really is helpful for human flourishing. And I think there's plenty of it in the Christian tradition.
You said, we are convinced that any kind of healthy sense of soul, spirituality, or healthy religion has to be more about the life you actually live than about some dogmas or beliefs you adhere to only mentally. Mm-hmm. When people experience a disconnect between what they believe and how they live, I think the result is shame.
Absolutely.
So I'm interested in how you found your way out of the shame that I feel like is so endemic to traditional, or as you say, American Christianity.
Well, I think learning to trust yourself is a huge part of building a spirituality for yourself. And I had to learn to trust my own spirit. And any exclusionary, closed-minded, we have the truth religion trains you not to trust yourself. It's like, don't trust your emotions, mm-hmm. and we have all the truth. And so I think a big part of being able to escape that mental trap was to start to trust myself, to ask myself, like, what are the things that are resonating with me? What makes sense to me? What's life giving? Like the thing you read earlier, I don't know where that's from or when I said it, but it sounds like me.
You said it Sunday.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. I was like, yeah, it sounds like me. Yeah. I don't think that you choose your beliefs. What I mean by that is your beliefs visit you. You can choose how to live, but you cannot choose to believe something you find unreasonable. And so, for instance, if I said, you know, I'll give you $1 million if you can believe truly that there's a leprechaun sitting on my left shoulder, as much as, you know, you'd probably have some good uses for that $1 million, unless you're prone to delusion or you have some sort of mental illness, you really can't make yourself believe something that's unbelievable. And I think a lot of the religious traditions are fixated on this sort of delusion of what they call faith is like sort of willpower of delusion. You know, you have to force yourself to believe something, and I don't think that's how that works. Your beliefs are your beliefs. They'll change when you love deeply or you lose deeply. So pain and suffering and love, that will change your beliefs. But at the end of the day, what you choose is how to live. And, you know, I think in reference to that quote, what I was just trying to communicate was, as a community, we don't put belief as our organizing center. We organize around the value of self-transcendent love. And whatever your beliefs are, you know, insofar as they help you become love, we like your beliefs. If they do not, then they're unhelpful, not only for your own further evolution and growth into becoming love, but they're unhelpful in addressing the needs of our present reality on planet Earth. Like, you know, there are a lot of beliefs out there that do not help people engage our struggles as a people and as a planet in any meaningful way. They're just a way to be superior or escape the world for some promise of a speculative afterlife scenario. These are uninteresting to me. What's interesting is, what are the ways in which we can live that lead to the flourishing for all of life, human and non-human?
You said there are two kinds of people. There are people who come to church because they appreciate the tradition, and those who come to church to die to their former self and former life and be born a new creation. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, sure. That's, you know, integral philosopher Ken Wilber is the guy who I take that concept from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the difference. He talks about first-tier and second-tier religion. First-tier religion, which is much of what, you know, the new atheism is railing against and what a lot of non-religious people are trying to critique. And I'm in full agreement with them. First-tier religion is all about what Ken Wilber calls it translation. And this is just about fortifying the false self. It's identity markers, tribalism, we're the right group. All it does is build up the false self, builds the ego. We're right. We're in the right group. It galvanizes. And there's a point in the consciousness where that's an important... I mean, we do this with kids. You know, we give them a clean, tight, tidy little worldview of certainty. But if someone's going to move beyond those simplistic versions of religion, or I guess in that setting I was talking about church community, now it's about the unwind. Now it's dying. Now it's unlearning. How does Adya Shanti say it? Like, something about enlightenment is not about chasing happiness. It's about just uncovering everything you thought once was true, is realizing it's now untrue. I'm butchering the quote, but that's second-tier religion. That's the kinds of people, again, that I think Eastlake is for. It's people who are waking up to the reality that the world that you were told existed isn't always reality. And you have to be open to transforming, to having your biases and your prejudices exposed. And I think the healthier you are spiritually, the more ready and open you are to being exposed as being wrong. And the more you get used to that, the easier it gets. And you can start to enjoy being wrong. Like, you get to laugh all the time. Like, wow, I was so wrong.
I know nothing.
And you know, hopefully you get to be a little bit more right than you were yesterday. There's no escape from thinking you're right. Because as soon as you think you're wrong about something, you change your mind. And guess what? You're right again. So being right isn't the issue. It's the way we hold being right. And you can say, like, this is based on my understanding. This is my best go at what reality is. But if you can hold it open-handedly, that's the goal, I think. And saying, I've got to be wrong on some of these things. And I'm open to being shown where. I think that's a healthy posture. And I think that's that second level of either churchgoer or second-tier religion. That's about transformation.
Do you think it could be maybe reduced or simplified to the idea of certainty or uncertainty?
Yep, and that's the clinging attachment stuff that, like, the Buddha teaches us that much of our suffering is optional. And so I think that, yeah, making plans is great, but at the end of the day, you don't know. And that's why I think people are addicted to certainty, is because what they actually know is that they're not in control. And so certainty is sort of this drug that we can give ourselves to calm down. Like, I don't have to face my mortality if I can be certain about a bunch of other things. It's sort of it's always the stretch for everlasting life, I think, is this, it just is all wound up in certainty. Whether it's about everlasting life or not, it's about survival at least. I'm certain I'm going to be okay, you know, and to not have that sort of opens Pandora's box of fear. And people do not like feeling that fear.
Does the phrase spiritual bypassing mean anything to you?
I'm not familiar with it.
It's the idea, I think that in some ways it's this sort of practice that we're describing of, you know, people don't like the fear. Mm-hmm. And so they use God to explain it away.
Oh, yeah.
They find certainty. But I think oftentimes in, for example, a yoga community, or I don't really know how to refer to it. I suppose it would be commonly thought of as a new age community, or I really like the phrase woo-woo.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean when I say that though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, woo-woo, it covers a lot of ground, and it's pretty illustrative. It gets the point across. But I feel like in the woo-woo community, there's a lot of like, you know, if you believe it, you can be it. And,
yeah.
you know, kind of law of attraction kind mm-hmm. of thing, the
sure.
secret.
Manifesting.
And, you know, where it actually is another means of spiritual bypassing,
mm-hmm.
maybe at a little deeper level of consciousness. But I think that it nonetheless, it's a way of avoiding the real work and avoiding the real, you know, sort of the dark night of the soul that reveals our illusions for what they are, which is
mm-hmm.
that we're really not in control. There's mm-hmm. little we can be certain of.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. In fact, some of my critique of the, you know, the world that actually the Christian world says I'm in, new age, you know, craziness, the light, everything is light, we're all light
mm-hmm.
crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a critique of that scientifically. In fact, scientifically, that's just right on the money. We are all light. But it's a little oversimplified. And I think that too often we forget the shadow, you know? And that's why I'm really grateful for Jungian psychology, because it doesn't just put a happy face on our humanity. Like there are, we've got some issues. And the world is the way it is. Because we're not all just gumballs and light and love and let's just all hold hands and sing kumbaya. Like, we have some deep-seated issues that, whether you call it your shadow side or what terminology you want to put on it, that spiritual bypassing concept is not helping anything. We're just sweeping things under the rug that, as you said, we don't want to do the work. I don't think that's helpful. And in the same way, like I said earlier, like, you know, this is overly simplistic, but Buddha's saying much of our suffering is optional. I totally agree with that. And I also think Jesus is saying some of our suffering is non-optional.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, not only is it non-optional, it's essential for us to grow. Otherwise, we're just going to keep going in this silly little circle, learning the same lesson over and over. Or actually not learning, but taking
repeating
the
it.
Same lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that would be the optional suffering, for
mm-hmm.
example. But for authentic and lasting growth and healing, do you think it has to hurt?
No. In fact, I think you can grow just through love. But I do think that, I do think this. Maybe 7 times out of 10, just to grab a number out of thin air, we usually only grow through pain. But some people are able to, grow maybe more often. I guess I just should just speak for myself. I think when I take leaps of growth, it's through loss or pain or something not going the way I wanted to. And I wish I could grow mostly through positive experience.
I wonder if we aren't trained to grow through positive experiences.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I wonder if we don't have a capacity to do so in the way that, for example, some people are not really very good at receiving. And in a sense, when you're receiving healing or receiving, some type of new insight that will help you to grow, to me, it feels like getting thrown into the washing machine. It doesn't necessarily hurt, but
mm-hmm.
you're, in a sense, dying to who you used to be.
Yeah.
So it's, while it may not be painful in that way, you have to be able to receive it and to make space for it.
Absolutely. I think even just disorientation, though, I don't necessarily think that when I say pain, it has to be some catastrophic, you know, suffering you're going through. But even just to move through levels of consciousness, like even something like spiral dynamics or something, or where you're looking at people going from one level of awareness to another, I would say, you know, when I say it requires pain for me most of the time, when I say that, I mean something even just as small as your old worldview no longer works. And so you have to go through the disillusionment, aka pain or suffering, of your old worldview. It just no longer works. Like growing out of clothes, you're like, I can't keep putting this shirt on. It doesn't fit me anymore. And that awkward, oh, doggone it, and I can't wear these anymore, that's a painful experience. So I think people can totally grow through positive experiences, but the pain or the suffering doesn't that necessarily have to be your child dying or something, but even just something as small as this no longer functions, mm-hmm. is people tend to grow then, you know, yeah. because it's just like, there's no more excuses anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. Like, I remember when I couldn't play G.I. Joes anymore, like as a kid, like I think I was pretty late in the game, like seventh grade or something. And I was like, I got my G.I. Joes out and I was like, it wasn't fun anymore. I could no longer access that, like, let me get out my action figures thing. And there was a grief there.
I was going to say, it opens up grief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, I don't know. I don't know if that was a positive thing, but at the end of the day, I do think that that same thing plays out in consciousness or in our spiritual, you know, growth or whatever you want to call it, where stuff that once worked for you is too simple and the world got bigger, mm-hmm. or more astounding or further out of your reach of your certainty that we were talking about earlier.
You have publicly affirmed the LGBTQ, mm-hmm. LGBTQA, if you will, mm-hmm. community. You've canceled church for a Seahawks game. Your services include meditation and affirmations and readings from people like Ajahn Chanti. Mm-hmm. You've announced that yours isn't a real church and that you don't care what people believe. And you've inspired a church which takes place in a bar. Did you know about that?
Oh, yeah, Nate. That's my buddy Nate. Yeah.
Is there any limit to the number of conventions you're willing to buck?
Probably not. I think that's been my personality my whole life. I'm not interested in saying what's been said, you know? Plenty of places out there protecting what was. And I actually think that's an important function in society. Somebody has to be the trunk of the tree. But most of the change and the shine and the lights and the color happens at the edge. And that doesn't last very long. Those leaves come out and they're green for a little while and then they fall. And whether East Lake lasts for another year or another decade is irrelevant to me. Like, our role, our function isn't better than the trunk of social stability. But our role's more out on the edge. And I'm happy to play that part. And, you know, is a flower as beautiful if you don't know it's going to die? I don't think so. So I'm enjoying the beauty of what we're doing without attachment to needing it to last forever.
East Lake Community Church meets every Sunday at Juanita Elementary School in Kirkland, Washington. The service is also broadcast online and via podcast. For more information, go to eastlakecc.com.